The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
International Podcast Day is September 30th, and you can help spread the word. International Podcast Day is dedicated to promoting podcasting worldwide. You may be asking, what can I do to get involved? It's pretty simple. First, head over to internationalpodcastday.com and check the suggestions. Second, use hashtag Podcast Day to join in the conversation. Remember September 30th. Now, let's start the conversation.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. The World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant. I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO. And, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall. Episode 19 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Today we're going to be joined by Dr. David Kirby, along with Matt Lindland, the current U.S. National Greco-Roman head coach, and Terry Steiner, the U.S. Women's National Freestyle coach. And we've got the World Championships coming up in Las Vegas from September 7th to the 12th. First thing I want to do is I want to talk to Matt Lindland, and I want to be like, how stoked are you to have the World Championships in Vegas, a town you know well from your days in the UFC, and just the fact that the Worlds are back here in the United States for the first time in a long time?
Jason, I'm pretty excited. I always wanted to wrestle in the World Championships myself, and now I get the honor to coach the U.S. team at the World Championships here for my second year, and it happens to be in Las Vegas. And you're right, it is a fight town. I'm not a huge fan of Vegas, just to go out there and be a part of that, other than it's a great fight town. No, man, there's some great fights that have happened in that town, and this is going to be one of the best events I think we're going to ever see.
Terry, the last time the Worlds were in the United States in 2003, it was a banner performance for the U.S. women's team. Granted, it wasn't because Japan had a great performance, a slightly better performance, but it was a great performance for the U.S. women. With it being in Vegas, do you expect the performance of the Americans to be, it's kind of hard to match that level back in 2003, but what were you expecting from not just the women's performance, but the performance of all the Americans getting to be able to wrestle in Las Vegas on home soil?
Well, we have high expectations. I mean, trying to match what we did in 2003, that's a tough thing to put on anyone, and I don't want to put that on this team. But we know that we're very capable of climbing to the top, and that's definitely our goal in Las Vegas next week.
Our other guest on the program, Dr. David Kirby. You might know his name from his 1971 freestyle championship at 191.5 pounds. Actually, in case you're wondering, Dr. Kirby was one of the very first freestyle champions for what was then the U.S. Wrestling Federation back in 1971. Dr. Kirby does a lot with the United World Wrestling Scientific Commission, and he's the director of the International Network of Wrestling Researchers, which will have a symposium on September 5th at the Orleans. That is the same arena the Worlds will be held. That starts at 8:30 in the morning. 3 keynotes, 6 mini lectures. And Dr. Kirby, welcome to the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. I want you to tell us a little bit about this symposium that's coming up and your role with the Scientific Commission and the International Network of Wrestling Researchers.
Well, first of all, Jason, thanks for reminding me how old I am.
Hey, anytime. That's what I'm here for, man.
Yeah. But anyway, we're real excited, as everyone is, to focus on wrestling in our home turf. We are sort of kicking off the activities with a scientific symposium on Saturday, doing so to maybe allow for better access for some of the people who are also coaches or officials, et cetera, team doctors. But we're excited to have that going on in as a prelude. We've got Ms. Lalovich. We're going to kick off the opening, giving us some real good stature there. Stan Didzik, Rich Bender, all being present. We're going to have we were sort of have that theme of this year of focusing on women's scientific research. So our keynote lectures have that bent. We've got Boris Podlyubayev giving the Ryko Petrov lecture. It's an honor, a big honor to do that. We're honoring Ryko Petrov. I don't know if everyone around the world knows, but he passed away. He's a great coach, scientist. He published over 80 books on wrestling that have been translated around the world and from Bulgaria. And we honored his memory by having this special lecture. And Boris is going to talk about some of the research he's done. He's another guy that's very prolific, but he's working with the women's team along with Yuri Shakhmuradov. So it's quite a combo there, but that's going to be a great lecture. We've got Dr. Carol Maitre from French Institute of Sports, and she's going to be, she's been working with women wrestlers for, she's a gynecologist for over 20 years. So we're looking forward to another great speech there. We've got some folks from Greece that are going to give the third keynote on youth wrestling and developing good practices there. So it's going to be a full day, and I invite anybody that's interested in any of this. It's going to be a great chance to mingle with some of the top professionals of our sport from around the world.
Dr. Kirby, you mentioned that that there was a focus on women's wrestling. How much? What are some of the topics that are going to be relevant to a guy like Terry Steiner and to his athletes and to, you know, coaches and wrestling people around the world that say, all right, that are starting to coach more women? That it's like, okay, these are some issues that the international network have discovered. I mean, where do they cross paths? Where is the education going to come from here?
Yeah, it, you know, the whole phenomenon of women's wrestling, it's, I mean, in the whole scheme of wrestling, it's rather recent. And it's sort of a double-edged sword in that women, as they've gotten involved in all the combative sports of the Olympics now, you know, boxing was the last one in London to be included, but they certainly don't want to be treated that much differently. And we're not there to, when people are researching the profiles of what makes a champion, I think that there's a desire to say, to focus on some of the similarities, because, but at the same time, there are differences. If we just talk about upper body strength, I think when scientists do it, they've been involved in wrestling, they're not going to do it as in a pejorative manner, trying to put down women, because we've seen some of the tremendous development, say, in upper body strength, and some of the Japanese women who score quite high in that because it's been focused training. Likewise with some of Terry's girls. So while we like to see study on differences because they can't be treated just exactly the same as men, for maybe some just the menstrual cycle has some training implications, etc. But we want to identify those, but at the same time, we're not looking at them as negatives because we're here to promote and help the training of all of our athletes, not to hold any group back. But I'm a big admirer of our women athletes. You know, in the large picture around the world, I think they put forth such a great face in our 2013 struggle to save the save our place in the Olympics. So I really have to say that there are some subtle things, even the psychology. We don't want to say they're different, but even in some of Terry's writings and presentations have talked about maybe some of the different psychological approaches. They need to feel a little more affiliative with their team. There's the social networking is a little bit important, a little different than maybe the guys on a men's team that Matt might have. But all in all, there's some very interesting things that need to be researched. What are some of the limits as we're seeing some of these women push forward in all fronts on combative sports? I think we're here to you know, take away some of the old stereotypes and really push forward and see what's possible.
Coach Steiner, what are some of the things that you've discovered about, you know, obviously you've been coaching women's wrestling for a long time now, but some of the things that Dave and his group have put out to the coaching community that coach women's wrestlers be like, okay, wow, this is something that kind of opened your eyes to something.
How long is this program?
As long as it needs to be.
I've learned a lot, but I have a lot to learn yet. I mean, you know, it's constantly learning more. But I think the biggest thing, you know, I mean, obviously, Dave brought up the menstrual cycle. That's a huge thing that I never ever thought about and never had to deal with.
Coach Steiner, it's also something that's very uncomfortable for a lot of people to talk about when it comes to sports.
Yeah, but it's life, and it's a female, you know, it's female life, and it's definitely it comes around every month, and then you've got to be willing to deal with it and how to handle it. So you don't have a choice as a female coach not dealing with it and not talking about it. I mean, that's part of the job, and so I mean that's a huge thing, and right along with that, you know, just. One thing that we never had to worry about so much on the men's side of things is our iron count, you know, because a lot of time we get low iron in our blood draws and things like that. And a lot of that's because of the loss of blood. And we just never had to deal with that on the men's side of the sport. So that was a new issue for us for me personally as a coach that, you know, I had to deal with and had to understand a lot better. So, that's one of the things I think from the social side of it. I mean, the communication aspect of coaching women is different, and it's not just different in our sports lives and our my career here, but it's different at home. I mean, how I talk with my daughter and my wife is probably a lot different than how I talk with my brother. And it's just those kind of communications go across the board when you're dealing with female athletes or female in general. It's a different aspect.
Now, shifting gears over to Matt here. And Matt, obviously, this is your second Worlds with USA Wrestling in the coaching position. What are some things that just give some background. Matt's always written blogs and things that break things down. Maybe not truly scientifically, but you've always had a manner of presenting things. What are some of the scientific things that the International Network of Wrestling Researchers and maybe the Scientific Council bring to a Greco-Roman coach that you guys look at and be like, wait a minute, okay, whoa, okay, I wasn't aware of this. It's kind of the same thing I was asking Terry, but maybe from a technical and tactical standpoint versus the psychological standpoint.
Okay, that's some good questions. And first of all, I want to say Dave's an absolute rock star in this world. I mean, we went to Iran together, and everybody really, really admires him, respects him in this field, and so do we, you know, as part of what he does. And so this is a great thing that Dave's doing, just to get that information out. I mean, when I got here, I think it was about almost a year to finally get in and see the sports science department here at the USOC. And I guess me learning how it works with inside the USOC and the time I was here, we've had three different physiologists. So it's a bit of a revolving door. Hopefully this new lady, Lindsay, she's great. She helped us do some VO2 max testing. We did some lactate threshold testing. We actually tested core temperatures, and we did resting metabolic rate. We're taking all that information, looking at what we're doing in training, how we can adjust here in the last couple of weeks. We're looking how we can plan for next year. The Olympics is every 4 years, as everyone knows. And so we want to gear up, especially for Rio, but taking the information we're getting, looking at what we're doing training-wise, seeing if we're on the right track, which it looks like we are, and we want to continue down those paths. But getting more and more of our athletes tested and finding out what those baselines are, so we're not just, you know, training guys based on age-predicted heart rates, say. We're actually getting Andy's real heart rate, and we're able to increase his threshold training in there. Different things we're doing, but it all starts with getting the guys tested. If we don't have these baseline numbers, we have nothing to go off of. We're just guessing, and that's kind of what I was doing for the first year, because I didn't have access to the resources that are available at the USOC, and I'm starting to make inroads there, and learning how to work within that structure and getting that information, and then using those tests to constantly improve our training systems.
Dr. Kirby, I want to get some information here about the historical relevance of the International Network of Wrestling Researchers, its relationship with obviously coaches like Matt Lindland, Terry Steiner around the world. So this is something where you are the director of this organization. I first heard of it in, I believe it was 2010 I had first heard about it, but I'm not really down on the history of the organization. Why don't you just break it down for us to understand and where the connection is between science and wrestling. It's not just go out there, rip the guy's arm off, beat him over the head with it, and pin him or her.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned at that point the combat sports, of which wrestling is the oldest and the leader. It's really funny that it's especially apparent in the United States that we haven't built our training based on science. And I noted that when I was a young wrestler myself. You know, and a lot of people are like this. I'd read everything that people said, and I'd try to collect. And we'd always heard about the systematic scientific study in the Eastern Bloc countries. And we were always, well, what are they doing? Well, they had just broken it down and applied science to systematically to sport. And that's what all sports, modern sports, have done. You look at track and field, swimming, et cetera. These people have... the scientists were in there studying training programs for a long time. It seems that wrestling is somewhat lagging behind. When I saw that, I just felt that, and I knew that we needed to sort of unite and tap into that information. And with the breakdown of, say, the Soviet Union and the opening up, internet, et cetera, you can become colleagues and friends with people all over the world. And this idea first came to us when I was with Yanis Barbas of Greece and Bachman Mirzai in Kazakhstan at a FILA coaches club. And we just talked about this very thing in 2007. And from there, we just started networking and building an organization where we shared information, started planning some presentations, cooperated in some research. And it's grown to maybe we've got over 400 wrestling professionals, and I think it's about 77 countries around the world. And we've got some outstanding people. I've mentioned Boris Podlaveev from Russia. We've got Dr. Harald Thunemann from Germany, who actually did work in the former East Germany. And the things that he was doing, not doping, people always think that, but it was so systematic. They had an actual robots that would simulate electrohydraulic, they would simulate upper body Greco-Roman techniques, and you would struggle against this machine, and they would take all sorts of measurements. So it's some of the stuff is out there, and it's just a matter of getting together. And we've had this scientific symposium at the past five world championships, and I'm excited to be the host here in Las Vegas for when we have a chance to host it. Had some great support from Rich Bender and USA Wrestling.
Yeah, and again, that symposium is on September 5th at 8:30 a.m. runs to 3:45. So if people are interested in jumping in and checking this out, is there a fee, or is there, you know, how can people that may be, you know, high school coaches that want to check it out?
Yeah, the only thing we're trying to make our organization more professional. We publish a International Journal of Wrestling Science twice a year, with some really, really good stuff.
That's a pretty serious binder, too. I've seen these things. I mean, these things are serious.
And so it's being published now. Instead of being published in my basement, Routledge, who is a great publishing firm, known worldwide, is our publisher. And because of all of that, we're saying, okay, you join the International Network of Wrestling Researchers for a fee of $40, and you'll get the benefits of our membership. But also that'll give you the instant subscription. But we're trying to build it up, and everyone's invited. So it would be a $40 membership fee, and then there will be a few other perks associated, access to information databases, et cetera, some other journals as well. But anyway, it's not unlike a lot of other sport federations that have got a scientific side. And we're just trying to really go pedal to the metal and have a great exchange of ideas and just improve our sport. Practical things. You know, we were talking about women, and Terry was talking about, you know, you can't just treat a woman identically in the weight control or weight management. It's going to be a little different because some of the proportions of different substances in our bodies are different. Women don't have as much the water because they've got a higher percentage fat. Fat and water don't mix. So these are things that you can't just assume that, oh, it's identical to how you treat a man. Also, the fact that for everything that we've researched over the past 50, 60 years in men, we almost have to duplicate or replicate with women to see detect any of the differences there as well. So it's quite a fertile field of study, and we welcome trainers, coaches, and all of the people associated with our field of wrestling to make it better and use scientific principles.
Now, this isn't to be confused with the United World Wrestling Scientific Commission, which you are a part of. So I want to shift gears over to the Scientific Commission for a little bit, because this is where I think some of the listeners might wonder, what does that do in comparison? Now, that's obviously tied into science as well. But there's also the breakdown, like Tuneman is one guy who breaks down a lot of video. We're looking at techniques that score and all sorts of stuff like that.
All the federations, UWW is now going to be they've been making Darkfish available, film of all of the competitions, which can be actually used by in a biomechanical sense to actually see speed of movements and different limbs, etc. But also just some things of scoring technique, time, etc. And I know that we're just trying to make that more available. Going back to the whole thing about, we had this started this network in 2007, and as I said, I always saw that the fact that science wasn't a priority within the field back in, as it was called back in those days. And we were pushing, we were the sort of the people that pushed for a scientific presence in the Wrestling Federation structure. And that was achieved a few years ago. And so some of the same people that were responsible for the INWR, myself, Boris Podlaveev, Giannis Barbas, Bachman Mirzai, and Harold Tuneman, we were the five people named to the commission. To give you some insights, of course, I don't want to take everybody's anger, but we've told them that we're a resource that we want you to come to solve problems. We gave our input on weight classes, although I don't think that the way it was implemented was in total concert with what we gave them, because what we provided them, they said, hey, we're going to have six weight classes. Okay, we gave a rationale and a structure for that. It did some study and did that. But then the final implementation, when they're going to have eight weight classes, they just plunked two, where they chose, that had really no connection to the setup for the other six weight classes. So there's still some communication issues. Stan Didzik just came to me a few weeks ago and said, hey, what have you heard about this research that says in combat sports, the person that wears the red singlet has an advantage? So we've provided a summary of some of that research that seems to indicate that, for whatever reason. But we're trying to tease it out. It was given to us by some anthropologists that said that this is something that just increased aggression in men. So another thing, they came to us to give us some support for having 15-year-olds included in the Youth Olympic Games. And so, because some of the people on the IOC said, hey, if you're going to have 15, 16, and 17, that's too wide of an age range. But I was able to provide them with injury research, because that's really, in the U.S., that's high school. And we know that 15, 16, 17-year-olds compete together. So I was able to provide them that injury date and show that the 15-year-olds weren't at increased risk. So these are some of the examples of people coming to us to help solve their questions. And it would be, I think that's important, whether it's wrestling rules, involve coaches and sports scientists. But, we've been just looking at the near past, and it seemed like some of these the rules were just cooked up over a bottle of wine by a couple of FILA Bureau members. So no rhyme or reason. So we're just trying to put a more rational approach to an answering and helping to solve problems that are out there.
Now we're going to shift gears a little bit. We'll start with Greco, as we're going to talk about a little bit of a preview. And first of all, Dr. Kirby knows a little bit about Greco-Roman. His son Jacob, passed away a couple years ago, was a member of the U.S. national team in Greco-Roman. The Kirby Cup has been a Greco-Roman duel that's been held in past years. And we'll talk about the Kirby Cup when it comes back around in a future episode of either this or the Short Time Wrestling podcast. But Matt, we're going to start with you and talking about this team. And again, this is your second time around. Andy Bisek kind of broke the streak of the medal drought rather last year with a bronze medal at 75 kilos. That weight class is probably one of the most loaded weights across the entire tournament, but we're looking for Spencer Mango to get his first medal, Justin Lester to get back on the stand for the first time since 07, Bisek to repeat. You got guys like Jordan Holm, Kaylor Williams, Robbie Smith who have been there, and first timer Patrick Martinez straight off the college mats, and then obviously Bryce Sidoris in his second trip. So it's a seasoned but still the credentials on the world level really aren't there yet. So let's just start with your overall idea of what to expect, or what you're hoping the American fans can expect from the Greco-Roman team this year in Vegas.
Okay, well, we start Monday at 66 and 75 and 98. Those are our weights. And yeah, Andy was broke through last year with a world medal. He had a great match against the Russian and took him out. And Arsen Dufalekian is a phenomenal champion last year. Vlasov is back and Kim was the the Asian Games champion. Right at the top there, we're deep, and it's right in the middle. You've got your bulkier population right there in the middle. And so you look at the weight classes, and that's definitely a bell curve of where, you got speed, strength, and technique. And so 75 is, in my opinion, one of the toughest weights, like you stated. Andy's right there, and we're confident his training has been going phenomenal. We have been using some of the scientific research. We did some testing with our athletes on the mat. We call that field testing, and then we did some stuff in the lab as well, and we're using that stuff to just to verify, we're ready, we're on track, we're moving in the right direction. And Andy's healthy, his mind's right. We've incorporated a sports psychologist with our program over the last year. His name is Jack Stark. He's going to be out at the World Championships with us. Rulon, Brad Varing, myself, Justin Reese, we worked with Jack when he was at University of Nebraska working with the Husker football team. And now he's currently employed with Hendrix Motorsports, and he's volunteered his time, and he's been out twice already to our camp, and he's going to be at the World Championships with us as well. So that's another piece that we've added. 66, Bryce is a fierce competitor, ton of heart, great leader. Only his second trip to the World Championships, and he made the team, basically a year out of college himself. We're talking about Martinez doing the same. Bryce has got a little experience. He won a match last year at the Worlds. He lost a very close second match. An area that we lost three matches in was those matches where there's no scoring on your feet, and the passivity point won those matches. That was the match that Bryce lost that took him out of the moving on. We fixed some of those problems with continuous improvement in his parterre position. We get on top, we have to score. That's a critical area for these guys. So, we're really, excited about Andy and Bryce starting us off. We also got Kaylor Williams at 98 kilo. We've yet to see, him really break through. He's had some great matches, like at the Schultz Cup. He beat a former Olympic medalist, then lost in the finals. So, he's got to continue to work on his consistency. But we're going to start off strong with leading our best guy with 75 kilo. You want me to continue on through the weight classes?
No, I got a couple questions on that as we get to it, because Andy Bisek last year at this point, he was on fire, winning medals all over the place. He hasn't been as prolific with competition. He had an off-season injury that has kind of limited his overall competition. But where do you see Andy compared this year to last year? Obviously, the pressure's kind of maybe on a little bit. Expect, you know, when people win medals, I guess it's expected as Americans that, oh, well, he should medal again. Obviously, we talked about the quality of the weight class. But, what's the differences in training or the mindset this year with Andy from this year to last?
Well, I think that's an area that him and Jack have spoke a lot about. You know, as coaches, we've talked to Andy about that. Really, there is no pressure on him, you know. But it, obviously, as an athlete, you're going to feel that pressure. You know you're capable of doing that, and you want to improve on that. You know, he got a bronze medal. He wants to win a gold. And, you know, so I think Andy deals with that better than any of our athletes, to tell you the truth. I don't see him freaking out. I don't see him, you know, succumbing to the pressures. He's a consistent athlete, and I love to see that. I think the fact that Andy's, you know, he's married, he's got two kids, and, you know, he's a very grounded individual. He's a very quiet leader. You know, I wish he would get out and be a little more outspoken with his leadership abilities, because he is such a great leader. But you know, we got Bryce Sidoris, and who's a trained leader. You know, he was trained through the Navy, and he just became a major in the United States Marines now. So, I mean, we've got some great leadership on our team, and Andy certainly leads by example. Every practice, he does what's asked. And the other thing Andy does really well is he communicates with all his coaches very well, his strength coaches and his wrestling coaches. We're on the same page. You know, if there's an injury, we're communicating with sports medicine. And so I love the fact that Andy's on board. We've been training, you know, our cool down protocol, our warm up protocol. We understand there could be 20 minutes between matches. We know exactly how much volume of training we want to do to prepare for each match. You know, we've limited that. We've really focused on taking those scientific numbers and going, okay, we want to have Andy's heart rate at 155 as he's walking to the mat. He's going to spike his heart rate. He's going to walk to the mat at 155. He might be down to 145 as he steps on the mat, but we know that we've I don't know, we're calling it spiked his heart rate and got him up, because Andy typically he's a slow starter, so we need to have him a little more ramped up going out there on the mat.
Now, moving forward, obviously Spencer Mango has been so close to a medal the last couple of years. It's losing to a guy that pretty much had the same career, Stig-André Berg from Norway last year. The guy, I mean, they've kind of been mirroring each other, yep. And it became down to a passivity point and how close it was. Obviously, you know, Justin Lester, one of the more exciting guys we've seen. Everybody knows him as Harry, but it's been 8 years since he won a medal, and that's, you know, he's getting to the top end of his career with one Olympics cycle left to go. And then, you know, the guy that Jordan Holm is, he's one of the older guys on the team, obviously was out of competition for a long time. Robbie Smith is approaching 30. His beard is approaching 32. You've got a very dynamic team. Let's talk about those guys before we get to Patrick Martinez, because he brings another dynamic. But, you know, Jordan's made a couple world teams. Robbie's made a couple world teams. Spencer's made every team since 08. Yes. So, you know, what about those trio
and
there?
And like you said, Jason, you know, he's right there. You know, in 13 and 14, he was right up in the medal matches and came up short. He's definitely capable of doing it. He's another athlete that, you know, when I came here, I looked at Spencer and said, he's quick, he's athletic, he's strong, he's, you know, he's explosive, he's technical. I mean, he's been on every team. You know, what is it he's not doing? And that was a big reason why, you know, we brought in a sports psychologist to work specifically with Spencer. And he's done a great job of really embracing that and saying, okay, here's an area where I think I can improve. As coaching staff, we've looked at it and said, this is an area where maybe we need to bring in some outside help. And so that's an area that we're using that a lot in. Spencer's there. He's a great athlete. He's a great wrestler. He's just got to get it done. And I'm confident that Spencer's going to do it this year. I really am. I feel like he's going to have that breakthrough year. You know, last year he lost that same match that we're talking about, where, you know, he got a chance on top and his opponent got two chances on top and his opponent won on the passivity point. We have to score on top. And that's an area that we focused on a lot with Spencer. And he had, you know, he had a good summer, winter tour. You know, he's been in the medal matches every tournament he's competed in this year, and he's ready. You know, I feel good about that. Robbie was there in 13 as well.
Just a it's also a loaded weight. Heavyweight Greco-Roman is a loaded weight. I mean, you got a couple world champs, couple Olympians, and medalists there, and then obviously that monster that is Mian Lopez from Cuba.
Yeah, and you know, one of the top guys is not going to be there. Johan Magnus from Sweden, one of the top guys, is out here in Colorado for training camp, but he's not going to be competing. He's got an injury. You know, a lot of these come down to getting a good draw. You know, Robbie gets the right draw, he's going to have a phenomenal tournament. He's just got to get the confidence knowing that, you know, hey, I got to beat some of these guys that are really good. And last year that didn't happen. And in 14, he was right there. He beat some really good guys. Robbie's a phenomenal heavyweight wrestler. He arm throws, he headlocks, he body locks. He goes out there and scores points. He's got to go out there and pull the trigger.
And lastly, I want to talk about you know, Patrick Martinez, because this is 2 years in a row that somebody's pretty much come right off the college mats within a year and stepped onto the world team. Last year it was Joe Rao, who wrestled Division III at Elmhurst. This year it was Patrick Martinez, who started his career at Wyoming, ended up at Division II Nebraska Kearney, and he went down and started training Greco with J.D. Robbins, and then started really, you know, kind of coming on. What's Patrick got that might give him a little bit of an edge? I mean, it seems like he's got a guy with something, a lot to prove.
Yeah, you know, he made the move out here to Colorado and got in, you know, what I feel is a better training environment. You know, frankly, he's got more training partners. He's got more coaches than just JD out there. He also traveled overseas, got the experience internationally this year. I think that made the big difference for him. One thing that Patrick does is he's got a big heart. He's got a great gas tank. He's just got to focus on holding his position in every. He has these. He comes out real hot, then he slows down, and then he finishes strong. But somewhere in that middle of slowing down, he gives up some points. And so we've got to keep him. He's got the gas tank. He's got to come out hot and stay hot. You know, there should be no slowing down and like, okay, I'm going to reserve this energy to the last part of the match, because frankly there's some guys that are more technical than him out there right now, and he's got to hold that position and come out early strong, and he's got to stay on guys the whole time, because he does have a good gas tank, and so he's got to use that to his advantage, and there's no time where he can take that rest somewhere in the middle, you know, second, third minute, where he's like, okay, I'm just going to coast here and then I'm going to finish hard. You know, we discovered that through using the science on the field as well as off the field, and looking at the way he trains, whether it's his doing his sprints or wrestling his matches. He always feels like, I think it's a psychological thing, that he needs to reserve something for the last few minutes. But if you're way behind on the points, there's no point in reserving anything. So he's got to go hard the whole time.
Dr. Kirby, what are your impressions of this year's Greco-Roman team, and what do you hope to see? Obviously, being you know, a convert over to the Greco-Roman world.
Sure, you know, you mentioned Jake. Well, Jake was part of that crew up at Northern Michigan that was coached by Ivan Ivanov and Grunewald, et cetera. It was just a phenomenal group. You know, you mentioned Lester, Andy Bezik. I'd go up there and test those guys. Three or four times a year, and as you said, he had a great motor then, but his training was always so steady, and he was so conscientious that the technique now is caught up, and we're seeing these great results. But anyway, my for Greco right now, I've been working a lot with Momir in helping to promote maybe the sport in the rules phase and officiating, as we sort of envision it should be. Back in, we'd call it the golden age of Greco wrestling, maybe there have been some periods in the 80s, et cetera, where the stance was higher, the rules a little bit different. But Momir, you mentioned our scientific meeting out there. Momir is going to be presenting some data that he's collaborated with this professor from Serbia, Milorad Dogmanic, And they took the European Games finals and broke them down. And just about 80% of the time in a Greco match right now is spent in a sort of a defensive posture. Doug Monich calls it preventative wrestling. And the basic thing there is when your fingers are entangled, people aren't going to score points. And that's being done and being allowed to happen with the head down 80% of the time in those final matches in the European Games with the finest wrestlers. So where is wrestling gone? Where has Greco wrestling sort of gone off the tracks? And I think part of it is went so crazy with rules, trying to make the match shorter, this and that. And we've taken some of the beauty and technique out of it because of what we allowed to have happen. So that's sort of my thrust right now. I want to help to save Greco-Roman as a beautiful discipline in wrestling. And, of course, I love all those guys that you've spoken about on the team. And I've got great connections with them and just hoping the best. So I'm really excited to see what happens on Monday.
Now moving over to Coach Steiner. Obviously, this is one thing I want to touch on because it kind of crosses paths with the Greco and the men's freestyle before we really focus in on the women's freestyle. And that is the Bill Farrell Wrestling Room, as it was introduced a couple weeks ago. And if you are familiar with the U.S. Olympic Training Center, there used to be one long section of three mats. Now we've got eight mats in this wrestling room, and it used to be we'd have several camps in, and there was just so much room, and you know, the women and Greco guys would be upstairs, the freestyle guys would be downstairs, and they'd just have to shift. And Terry, how much is this new, the wrestling facility renovation really helped you, Matt, and Coach Burnett all organize practice times? Like, all right, well, we got a bunch of guys, and now you're not just tripping over people fighting for space.
The Bill Farrell Wrestling Complex here at the Olympic Training Center is really, they upgraded it how it looks like a wrestling room should look at the Olympic Training Center. I mean, it's state of the art. We have a lot of space. We have the ability to separate practices. It just gives us, as a coach, as coaches within all three disciplines of USA Wrestling, it gives us more flexibility with our times and just gives us a lot more space to have more camps in here. So it's been a great thing for us. I mean, not just the wrestling complex, but our new strength training building and that whole complex is great as well. So really the facilities here have been upgraded, how they, I think, should have been done years ago, and they've done it right.
You know, we talked about the success of the 2003 team, and you look at the makeup of that team and looking at who would won medals for the first time, who had had medals, who had been around. That was a veteran team with some experience, but y'all said some youth in there. And I'm looking at this year's lineup, and while I haven't done a straight comparison, we've got Alyssa Lampe's won a world medal. Whitney Connors won a junior world title. Helen Maroulis has won several world medals. Allie Reagan's got a pair of junior world medals. Elena Pereskova is a world champion, multi-time medalist, and Adeline Gray's won a couple world titles and medals. So, Lee James is a provisor, making her first appearance on the world team since 2007. Erin Clodjo's making an appearance, and it's like, so six of the eight women have won medals at the world level, whether it be junior worlds or whether it be senior worlds. So this is a team that's got experience, and obviously some of the factors that went through last year with performance with Tashkent and the food and whatnot. But first of all, before we get to individual aspects, you gotta like this team. I'm looking at it going, there's a lot of medals here. There's a lot of medals to be won and brought and to keep home, not bring home, but that keep home.
Well, there are. I mean, we do believe in this team. We like what we have. We've said it for years, and I feel this way, that when you make a U.S. women's team, you're ready to step on the award stand. And I believe with this team, we really are. I mean, we have to take advantage of being at home. We have to take advantage of just having everything this summer. This is the first summer in 13 years since I've been here. It's the first summer I've spent, other than the Pan Am Games, I've spent the entire summer right here in Colorado Springs, and all of our training has been here. And that, it helps a lot. I mean, it helps a lot just from the wear and tear on bodies and things like that. So having everything at home, we have to take advantage of that. And we have the team right now that can do that. And they realize what's at stake. They realize, it's not just the world championship. It's also the Olympic qualification. You know, there's a lot at stake right now, and then they realize that we've been close, you know, the last 3 years, but we've got to find our way over that hump, and having it at home hopefully gives us that edge.
One thing about women's wrestling that I've kind of been pushing on this show and on Richard Immel's Bonus Points show and on Short Time is about this is going to be the Americans' first opportunity to see wrestlers like Japan's two greats, Saori Yoshida and Kaori Icho, for the first time in 12 years. And for actually to talk back to Matt, this is the first time American fans will see a Greco-Roman world title at the senior level since 1979 on U.S. soil, because back in 03, it was just freestyle. The Greco was over in France. So there was nobody actually wrestling now that wrestled in the ones back in 1979. But, you know, Icho and Yoshida had their runs starting in 2001, 2003. I mean, as a coach that has to constantly figure out a way to beat these two, which has pretty much been almost impossible over the years, what can American wrestling fans look at when their focus isn't on the Americans, but they're looking at just wrestling as a whole? How important are wrestlers like Icho and Yoshida to the entire planet when it comes to women's wrestling?
Well, I mean, they've set the standard, you know. I mean, they are the ones that everyone's shooting for and gearing towards. And, you know, I mean, you know, again, they're just the standard, and they're great athletes. They're great people. You know, they've had long runs here, and then, you know, to stay on top, it's one thing to win. It's another thing to stay on top for a quad. These two have stayed on top for three and now into four quads, and where nobody's been able to knock him off at the World Championships or the Olympic Games. So, you know, that doesn't happen very often, and they're just two very special people. And you know, but having said that, it's our job to find a way to beat them. And you know, the other thing is we have some up and coming athletes right now, we feel, that are just starting to rise, that can go on runs of their own, and these two, you know, Yoshida and Icho, are on the tail end of their careers, and so you know, we'd like to do nothing more than send them home with a silver medal or a bronze medal.
Yeah, as we talk about the teams, we've got, you know, Elena Peraskova's won a world title, Adeline Gray with two of them. Adeline's performance last year, super cardiac in the opening round. I mean, was a point away from getting tacked, comes back and ultimately wins that match, and then, you know, ends up with probably one of the toughest draws in the history of women's wrestling, back to back to back to back to back. But when you look at the makeup of the team, you've got Helen Maroulis moving. She's not moving up. She's just the weight class has changed, and she's sitting what used to be an Olympic weight, it's a non-Olympic weight. So Icho's down at 53. Yoshida's down at 53, while Icho has dropped down to the Olympic weight of 58. So that opens up positions there for potential medals for the U.S. beyond. And so the decision for Helen was to say, all right, well, this is my weight class. I'm going to go out and win a Worlds, and then you guys as a staff are going to figure out where she's going to go for the Olympics. Or the Olympic trials, rather.
Well, part of it was that. I mean, I think part of it was, you know, she was at this weight last year. She's been at this weight. So part of it was, you know, we didn't want to get into a situation where we're, you know, taking off a couple more kilos for someone Helen's size. That makes a difference. And then you start doing that over and over and over. How many times do you want to do that? And she just felt that she could stay stronger and focus on wrestling and not just getting her weight in line and keeping that in line at 55. And when the time comes, she'll make a decision on either going to 53 or back up to 50, you know, back to 58. But you know, but she also realizes that, you know, she could, you know, win a world title here at home at 55 and then make a decision after that and not have to, you know, do all the strenuous activity of making weight. So I, you know, we'll look at it. We'll look at what's best for Helen and what's best for the team, and we'll make a decision after that.
You know, we talked about Lee Jane's Provisor, you know, her first world team appearance since 07. And this is a situation you've had to deal with as a coach before with a couple athletes. And this is kind of something going back to the scientific discussion we have with Dr. Kirby is Lee Jane's Provisor has a child. She took time off from competing, and now she's back on the mats after having a child. And that's something that – I don't know, maybe in your experiences, you know, at the University of Iowa coming through and then coaching after that, you didn't have to deal with until you got to women's wrestling and coaching women's wrestling. What have you learned from athletes like Sarah McMahon, from Christy Davis, to help you deal with coaching with another athlete that has a child?
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's any different when they come back on the mat and start wrestling again. I mean, they're ready to be back on the mat. I think it gives them a whole different purpose psychologically. I think they realize that there's a lot more things, a lot more important than the sport of wrestling, and that this is just part of their lives. It's not everything that they are and are about. So I think it actually relieves some pressure from that standpoint. You know, I remember, you know, back in 2000, I was a training partner for Lincoln McRaevey at the Olympic Games, and Lincoln got beat in the semifinals, and then he ended up going on and won the bronze medal. And we're walking out of the arena after he won the bronze medal, and his kid is sliding down the banister, walking down the stairs, and Lincoln looks at me and he said, "I guess it didn't affect him very much," you know, and it just, I think it just gives a different purpose, a different reason of what we're doing. I think that sometimes when you have kids in your life and you have family to deal with, I just think that you realize that this isn't the end all. It's just something that we love to do, something we want to do great at because we put a lot of time into it. And I think that's where Lee is right now. I mean, I think Lee understands she's, you know, got only a couple of years left of her career, and she wants to make the most of it. And what great example could she be for her daughter, you know, at this point in time to show her daughter that you can raise a family and do what you love to do. So, you know, I think she has a purpose of just being a role model for her daughter right now, too. So. Really, other than that, I don't think it's any different other than, you know, her daughter's in practice a lot, and then, you know, she maybe lightens it up when we need to lighten things up, but, you know, she's part of the family, so.
Looking at the athletes that need the breakthrough, obviously Alyssa Lampe's won a world bronze medal. You know, Allie Reagan's won a couple junior world bronzes. Aaron Claudio is yet the medal. But looking for the breakthroughs, Aaron Claudio, Allie Reagan at the senior level, she was close to a medal last year. And then Whitney Condor, who had won that junior world championship several years ago. What's it going to take for these three women to break through and get that senior level medal, if not a world championship?
Well, I think the first thing that we're looking at, you know, that we know will be a part of it and be a factor, and that's the crowd, the USA crowd, will be a big factor. But other than that, when it comes down to what does each individual need, I mean, Whitney Condor is a great competitor, and she's going to give you 100% every time she steps on the mat. You know, I think the biggest thing with her is she has to keep her pressure and stay into people, and she has some great defensive tactics, but she can't rely on that. She's got to get her offense going and just not beat herself. You know, I mean, eliminate the bad shots, eliminate the poor shots, and just stay strong throughout the match and not have those lapses. You know, in minute, you know, when we looked back through her video and everything, it looked like we lost a lot of points in the first minute and the fourth minute of the match. Those are very important minutes for us that we have to come out strong, both when the match starts and after the break. And then we just can't give those points up at that time. And if we can do that, we should be in matches. So for Whitney, that, you know, we know what we have to do. I mean, her style of wrestling is very straightforward and very simple, and we just need to stay within our boundaries. And if we do that, I think we'll have a shot at getting on that awards stand. Allie Reagan was very close last year. I mean, there were some key things that Allie needed to work on throughout the year, and she's done a great job at that. I mean, one was, again, finishing our shots and making sure that we're once we get in on shots, we're taking advantage and not letting those points slip away. So I think she's done a good job of improving those techniques. Also, from a kind of a defensive standpoint, her just her whole pressure, head position, hand position, and deep leg attack defenses had to get a lot better. So we had to, you know, it's one of the things that I think that happens when you see in, on the men's side of things, when you see kids going from high school into college, they focus so much on offense that the defensive part of their wrestling has suffered. And I think a lot of the girls that are coming into our senior level, is the one thing we find is, yeah, we got pretty good offenses, but defensively, we struggle a little bit. So Allie was definitely one of those people that her defensive tactics and strategies and techniques had to change and had to be worked on. So we've done that. And then also her parterre wrestling, just again, both defensively and parterre first and foremost. We had to understand parterre wrestling a little bit better and then getting a little bit of offense there, knowing where we want to go. So really pinpointing some go-to areas. Erin Claudio, you know, I think the biggest thing with Erin, I mean, she's been, you know, she hasn't been on the number one team, but she's a veteran within this program. She's been here a long time. She's paid her dues, and she finally found her way onto this team, and we feel really good about her. And again, with Erin, the biggest things are, I would say are our defensive techniques and strategies, what we're doing there, and then, you know, just not beating ourselves with mistimed or rushed attempts. But Erin's very big for this weight class. She's very strong for this weight class. She's had a lot of close matches with the top people and beat a lot of good people already here. So, you know, we feel very good about Erin, and I think having, you know, having it at home again in Las Vegas, I think that's going to help our team tremendously. Women, with the women's team, you can't underestimate how important that crowd is. And I know it's important for everyone because I saw that when I was at the University of Iowa. I saw what a crowd did to people when they came into Carver Hawkeye Arena. But I'd say even more so for women. That crowd is going to be a huge factor for us, and we're hoping that.
As we wrap up things here, Terry, I'm going to give you a final piece, then we'll go to Matt, and then we'll go to Dr. Kirby to finish things up. So here's the pitch for the American wrestling fan. These are two styles that we know that the favorite style in the United States is probably the American college style, the folk style, and then we go, you know, the names are in the freestyle, but now there's an opportunity that the American fans can see women in Greco-Roman. So Terry Steiner, what is your pitch to basically try to sell the American public that you wrestled Iowa. I mean, you know what college wrestling's about. You wrestled on that ladder, but what can you tell the wrestling fan? Be like, look, really, stop ignoring us. We're here. We're not going anywhere. You better just get on the bandwagon and roll with us.
Well, I think what you're going to see is wrestling. I think you're going to see great athletes. I think you're going to see very professional people. You're going to see great stars like Yoshida and Ichō from Japan who have controlled wrestling better than anyone has in their time frame. I mean, in the modern era, I mean, they've dominated like no other athlete in the sport of wrestling, and you're going to see athletes like that. You're going to see up and coming stars on the U.S. team like Adeline Gray, Helen Maroulis, Alyssa Lampe. I mean, these people are, you know, they put years of their lives away just like men do to try to achieve their goals and gain Olympic glory, and you're going to see this at work, and I think you're going to notice that, you know, yeah, it may look a little bit different, but it's very exciting to watch. It's a more wide open style of wrestling, and you're going to see that, I think you're going to just, I think people will fall in love with it if they open their arms to it, you know, and open their minds to it. Wrestling is a great sport, and we all know that, and I know I'm talking to the choir right now, but it truly is a great sport for everyone, and I think that's what people are going to see.
Matt Lindland, same question. Greco-Roman always looking for its search for respect, because a lot of these guys didn't wrestle in college, or at least on the Division I mats, and they're not recently names, but you came through the Division I world, you came through the junior college world, you came through the MMA world, you've won some medals, and the fight to make Greco relevant to the American culture can really be pushed right here in Vegas.
Yeah, well, I think the world's great. I mean, and we've got a really good team. It's an exciting style, especially with the way the rules have changed. I think there was a big drop off from wrestling when they were tweaking the rules, starting with reverse body locks and going to the clinch. And now we're back to wrestling, where wrestling's wrestling. It's 2-3 minute periods, and you're going to see some exciting matches. It's the best athletes in the world. I've been through the wrestling ranks, like you said. I went to the MMA, the professional side of things, and I'm back in the Greco-Roman wrestling, because this is where my heart is and my passion. I think it's the best style. I'm definitely biased. I think it's the most exciting style. It's the purest style. So if you're coming out to Vegas, get there early, come watch Greco, stick around, support the women, and then we'll all be there to cheer the men's freestyle on together.
Dr. Kirby, you get the last word here, and basically you can talk about anything with the men's and women's that we were talking about, the little push for the scientific commission, the International Network of Wrestling Researchers. And like you said, if anybody's interested, how can they join this group if they're not going to be able to attend Vegas? And how can they find you to find out what type of work you and your group are working on?
Okay, well, I'll start off by just saying that our website is at inwr-wrestling.com. All the information is there. So inwr-wrestling.com will get you into our website, and all my contact information is there. I think that I just want to echo the comments of Terry and Matt. These are the greatest athletes in the world. As people that study human performance and trying to maximize human performance, we know that our sport demands so much physically, technically, mentally, that you just have to admire the people who are out there. The stars that are out there, the sports heroes, I think, that always bring people to the sport. They're in every discipline. You've already mentioned the great Japanese champions, but we've got champions of our own. People always love to see the world champion. And here we've got Adeline and leading the parade there with our women. We've got in Greco-Roman, the world's going to get a chance to see Hamid Soroyan, one of the greatest athletes in the world from Iran in wrestling, as well as Lopez from Cuba. And of course, let's all go see Jordan and his gang. We want to also see Brent Metcalf break through this year. And I think I've seen him in the World Cup and watched him on television at the Pan Am Games, and he's ready to go. So we've got so many great sports heroes to watch and just admire and learn from. I can't wait.
And actually, there's one last thing I do got to mention. It's for Matt Lindland here, because Guy Seiko, who is our sponsor here at DefenseSoap.com, was on the program recently, and Matt's got a Defense Soap Clinic coming up at St. Edward High School on October the 20th. And Matt, why don't you just give us a little bit of details on what it's going to be like to go into one of the most iconic wrestling high schools in the country and showcase a little Greco-Roman wrestling?
No, it's going to be great. I'm excited to go out there. A guy invited me, and I jumped at the opportunity to go out there. We need to continue to grow Greco all over this country. We got to expose the young guys to the sport of Greco and get some of these young talented athletes to focus on Greco early on in their careers. We're starting to see it. Our junior team did not have the performance I was hoping for, because we had a phenomenal junior, we had a phenomenal cadet team. They just don't get the opportunity to spend enough time doing the Greco-Roman wrestling. And so if we can capture some of these young guys before they decide to go into the college ranks, I think we can improve vastly that way. I also think we can improve by capturing some of the top NCAA stars. You know, we had two NCAA finalists at our camp, Taylor Walsh, we had Kyven Gadson, and we had some other really, you know, top guys. We had Gabe Dean wrestle at the Pan Am Championships for us. So, you know, my goal is to get some of these big name stars to, you know, from the college ranks to start focusing on Greco, but also, you know, capture some of these younger athletes, because we've got so many talented athletes in our country. They just happen to be wrestling the wrong style for too long.
So for Dr. Dave Kirby, that was Matt Lindland, and Coach Terry Steiner. This is Jason Bryant. You've been listening to episode 19 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Check out all the resources available at the World Wrestling Resource at worldwrestlingresource.com.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.